This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Good afternoon. It is afternoon, 15 and a half minutes past. Sunny, windy, 57 degrees outside. Sunny, windy, about 23 degrees inside is the way it feels. And today, because it's Monday, we got to get started with something that's easy to digest, okay? How old must something be before you can include it in a museum? 1,000 years old? 100 years? 20 minutes? Yes, here's the milk you purchased just this morning, now seen in all its glory at the Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center. Behold, a quart of 1% milk as it was purchased and partially consumed on this very day, presenting an accurate look back at the level of civilization expected by the average Wenatchee Valley citizen who lived and prospered in this area as recently as 10 o'clock this morning. Oh yes, 10 o'clock this morning, when dogs, cats, deer, and raccoon were known to roam the valley in search of treats that some individual in that historic time would have acquired at the Plaza Superjet or other locales for food exchange known to be frequented by human mammals that some say walked erect. But according to other anthropologists, they possessed only the reasoning power most associated with the ring-tailed lemur or the Northwest Wenatchee baboon. What was it like for our early relatives, the overweight, now nearly extinct Wenatchee baboon, going about their business, never really knowing, never really certain, never really convinced about how our generation of modern baboons enjoy a wonderful life in the future, never dreamed of at 10 this morning. Mankind then was still struggling with putting on their sweater, finding the keys to their automobile that was operated entirely by hand with no computer override, no automatic computer thought suspension. Only a very few hearty souls in our time could deal with the minute-by-minute challenges that plagued our predecessors as they struggled with the ancient packaging still associated with the chore of historic milk consumption. Perhaps you can now muster a little respect and understanding, comparing your effortless modern life with the hardships and the struggles that were a major part of our ancestors' existence, now lost in the mists of time, and best remembered by some as the morning of November 5th. History is cruel, and it repeats, but only for those who refuse to understand that history repeats. By the way, I'll repeat this in exactly 20 minutes. We'll do the whole thing again. But now let's say hello to our very special guest, who's considered an authority on the Wenatchee Valley Museum. After all, she works there. Ashley Sinner's our guest. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's talk about what's new. It's your event.
What's coming up at the museum? There's always something happening at the museum.
That's what I should have said.
Well, this week we have a monthly children's art class on Saturdays, and this month it's this Saturday, November 10th, from 11 to 12. Kids probably around the age of about 4 to 10 would enjoy this class, and they get to do a hands-on project for free on our Artist of the Month in Coyote's Corner.
So when kids are 4 years old, they don't need art lessons. They're absolutely they're fearless artists. They will paint anything
so
you mention.
So creative.
That's
yes.
Right. They just start painting. They don't even hesitate.
Yes, and this month it looks like they're doing a Rick Adams is our artist in residence, and they're completing a picture from a series of individual photographs. So they'll do kind of like a collage of smaller photos that will be one larger photo.
And then can we finger paint right over the top of the photos?
I suppose so.
That's going to happen, so let's prepare for it. What other events are timely that we should know about?
Well, next week, if you're an adult and want to participate in kind of a STEM art lesson, we have Get Lit, and you can come and make a light-up Christmas card, or three of them, actually, on Wednesday, November 14th from 6:30 to 9 p.m., and it's Get Lit because the cards light up, and as part of your fee for the class, you also get a glass of wine.
I see.
Yeah,
so this is an adult time.
Yes, in our makerspace downstairs. So if you have never been to the makerspace, come check it out and learn all the tricks and resources down there.
It's called the makerspace because that's where people make stuff.
Because you make stuff, yeah.
So if I walked in the front of the Wenatchee Museum mm-hmm. today, what was the first thing that I'd see?
You would see our current exhibit, the Edward S. Curtis exhibit, is in the main gallery, and just at the back of the wall is a set of stairs, and you can go straight down the stairs to Makerspace. They had a pine needle basket workshop last week. Makerspace director, Adam Walker, works there all the time. He does lots of the robotics programs. The Lego robotics happen almost daily, I think, down in the Makerspace. So
there's a job open at the Wenatchee Museum.
There is.
I personally don't understand what a director of communication does, but that's because
it's
yeah.
a director of development and communication.
Oh,
and the
now
job
I really
posting
don't
is
know
on
what
our
I mean.
Website, and it's open until November 20th. And they oversee the marketing for the museum as well as the fundraising campaigns and our membership campaigns.
Most of the support, financial support for the museum comes from fundraising.
Yes, fundraising, grants, and sponsorships.
Now, you mentioned Edward S. Curtis. He's a
he's
a famous photographer from from our historic, from not that far, well, it's not that long ago, but he was in the right place at the right time to capture the essence of the Native Americans across the country.
That's right. He was operating under a false assumption at the time that the livelihoods or the culture of the Native Americans would become extinct in the near future. And gratefully, that didn't happen.
It mostly did.
But he did capture a picture of time of the culture then. And, of course, we have... They have a modern culture now, and so the Beyond the Frame exhibits kind of look back at what he captured and kind of talk about what does it mean to be a Native American today, because they aren't extinct.
Now, he captured a lot of the tribes that were currently at that time. What year was he doing these photographs?
It was actually several decades, but I would say off the top of my head, 1920 would be
So just after the turn of the century.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And he was photographing in the Columbia Basin.
So our exhibit is Edward S. Curtis Inland Bounty, and it focuses on his work in the Columbia River Basin.
Did he have any notations with the photographs? Did he write anything about them?
He had a lot. He had recordings even. So the soundtrack in our exhibit is actually those, and I can't think of the name of what they were, but they're like cylinder recordings of their music and language, and so that's part of
like
our
a dictaphone
exhibit.
Machine.
Yeah, but there's a name for it. I'm not thinking off the top of my head, but...
Wax cylinders.
Wax cylinders, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... How many photographs do you have on display?
I don't know exactly how many. But there are rather large prints of photos in the main exhibit hall, so they are like almost the height of the exhibit. So they're really large pieces. It's very immersive. And there are some artifacts under, you know, glass also throughout. There's a whole exhibit guide, so if you come and see the exhibit, make sure you pick up the exhibit guide, and there's writing in there, and it gives a lot of the history and background of Edward S. Curtis and how the exhibit came about.
Edward S. Curtis, interesting that he did so much of his photography here, because he was everywhere.
He was everywhere. He actually had a portrait studio in Seattle, and so he has a lot of work in the coastal tribes also.
Let's talk about the environmental film series. I don't want to miss out on that.
Yes.
Is this an ongoing series that goes all year long?
It goes usually, I think, September through May. So when it's not quite as nice outside,
right.
Especially now we're moving into colder weather, you might want to note we have three of our film and lecture series happening this month. So Tuesday, November 6th, which is... Tomorrow?
that does happen to be tomorrow.
There's 7 to 9 p.m. There's also one next week on Tuesday, November 13th. They happen on Tuesdays a lot.
What films are we talking about?
And so these ones are lectures. This one tomorrow is Richard Hart and the Wenatchee Right to Fish. Next week is Emily Washnings from Yakima Tribe, and she... is talking about Native foods and how part of her presentation is a slideshow. She interviewed elders, and they recaptured some land that was used for growing wheat for 70 years back to its historic roots of prime Wapato wetlands. So that's what she'll talk about, how the native foods and how they returned the Wapato back to that area.
How long have you worked for the museum?
1 year.
And what kind of year has it been?
It has been an interesting year for sure, but it's exciting and we have an exciting future.
What do you like best about it when you walk in the morning?
In my job, I love that I get to go tell everyone else about all the things that are happening at the museum, and there's always something happening at the museum.
And you've done that, so you can take the rest of the day off.
I have. One more environmental film Thursday, November 15th. That's also next week, and that is Dr. Bruce Beeler. He has a book, North on the Wing, that's popular, and he will talk about that. He's
North on the Wing, it's called?
North on the Wing. He's an ornithologist. So he has studied and researched, and there's even like a 60-minute special on some of his work he did a few years ago. So, yeah.
We'll have to talk to him because there's a mandarin duck in the Central Park Lake that shouldn't be there.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
It's come all the way from China. No one knows how it got here or what it's doing here or how happy it is, but it seems to swim around and do just fine.
That would make a good story.
We'll have to find out, though, from an ornithologist. How could that happen? Everyone thinks that it escaped from something going on in New York, and I think that's probably the most logical answer.
There is also next week, if you haven't had your Christmas photos, we have holiday family mini sessions at the Wells House with JP Studios. And so go to our website, check it out. If you need to have your Christmas picture, come have it at the Wells House in front of the fireplace.
Tell us that again, please.
It's holiday family mini sessions for photography. If you want to have a Christmas picture
special
taken with
Christmas
your family.
Special Christmas picture taken.
Yeah.
Yeah, taken JP, at the house.
JP Studios is taking pictures at the house in front of the fireplace next week.
That's nice. So how do we involve ourselves?
So you can go to the JP's website, or you can go to the link on our website calendar. It's November 14th through the 17th, actually, and there are different slots you can sign up for your own personal session.
Now, someone's going to come to the museum just today. What should they do? What do you recommend?
Well, you can't come today because we're not open to the public. So,
just knock on the door and stand there. Okay.
You can call me.
Go slowly and get there tomorrow. Yeah.
Come tomorrow, 10 to 4. See the exhibit. Gosh, last week we were so busy. We had The Haunt and we had Day of the Dead, both amazingly successful events. And of course, First Friday. So last Friday was First Friday. So you'll have to wait another month for First Friday. But don't forget, December 1st is Christmas Family Fun Day, and it's our annual tradition. If you want to come and make some holiday crafts, maybe make a few holiday gifts and get your picture taken with Santa, write a letter to Santa. It happens every year at the museum.
What happens to the letters that I write to Santa? Tell me the truth. What do you do with them?
Well, we mail them to Santa, of course.
Addressed to what?
Well, Santa Claus, the North Pole.
Thank you very much. Just wanted to check on the address. He does not have a zip code. He's the only house around. You don't need a zip code when you get that far north.
No, I don't think so.
Thanks to Ashley Sinner, Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center. Thanks for being here, Ashley.
Thank you, Michael.
Kevin Ome, candidate for Chelan County Assessor, is next.
You're listening to The Agenda. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
57 degrees, sunny and windy outside. Well, less sunny than it was 10 minutes ago. The clouds have claimed some of our morning sun, some of our afternoon sun. It's 12:32. My very special guest is Kevin Ome. Yeah, that Ome, O-H-M-E, just like the gardens, candidate for Chelan County Assessor. And that would normally be the topic of our discussion, but Kevin, You turned down the invitation to come here, I don't know, 3-4 times, and then always demurred and rethought it, and then came back. So what was that all about? Because you're not a bashful guy.
Well, actually, I worked in the assessor's office for 9.5 years, and I've spent a lot of time analyzing emails and deeds and all kinds of things. And
so my email that you set off all the red alarm.
Well, I would say that your assessment of the thread of our email was maybe inaccurate.
Okay.
But I really appreciate how it worked out because the stories, your teasers that you've brought out over the last couple days, maybe pulled in some listeners. I appreciate that.
Well, I only mentioned it because this month right now, I'm starting my third November in Wenatchee.
3 years.
Well, it's 2 years, but it's going to be, I'm on my way to the third year. It doesn't seem that long, but it is, in fact, that's the case. And in all that time, I booked a lot of people for the talk show, The Agenda, whose name I inherited and didn't like, and now I'm so used to it, I couldn't call it anything else.
It's part of you now.
Anyway, my point being, nobody was more difficult to book. Nobody. Than you. You were the most difficult. You said yes, you said no, you said yes,
well,
you changed your mind.
Well, I didn't say yes, I didn't say no. It was a very...
There was a lot
I should have known better. I've spent some time in radio studios, and I should have known better than to try to negotiate a booking with someone who was on the air and every few seconds had to pot up their mic and think about something else. But anyway, I've pored over our transcripts for 72 hours of being an assessor or wannabe assessor. And I just have to say, in the court of public opinion, it's my opinion that
yes,
your interpretation of that thread wouldn't hold up in court.
Okay, but so
I appreciate
we're not going to court,
happened.
But we made it this far.
Yes, and
we're not far from courthouse.
I'm astounded to be here, and
well,
I really appreciate it.
Do you regret your candidacy in any way?
It's been a rough road, personally. Having been an insider and in a lot of ways still feeling like an insider, it's been difficult to call into question, the job that friends of mine are doing.
Which is to establish the value of 44,000 pieces of property.
That's correct.
And
yes.
That's not easy to do, is it? Considering it changes all the time.
Well, I decided to run for assessor because I really appreciate a project that I will never finish. And county assessment has been in evolution ever since the beginnings of property taxation in Washington State. And that evolution, it's hard to keep up with. And initially, I've been looking for spellbinding accounts of county assessments from the old days, but I haven't been able to find any. But it's gotten much more detailed. There's less political, perhaps, decision-making as far as determining what the values are. Now we have to be able to prove by evidence that our value is correct.
So are you suggesting the value of this building that we're sitting in has been misvalued somehow for reasons
I didn't work in commercial appraisal much. There's always the possibility. Assessed value is a moving target. It's we take a pot shot. Well, maybe that's a little sloppy sounding. But January 1st of each year, we place values on all properties. And There is no correct value. We just have to try to be accurate. And there is always the possibility that the value is out of the bounds of accuracy.
Well, how far, plus or minus, would the true value, or do you think the assessor's office gets the actual stated value of a property?
I think if a taxpayer looks at their value and they have looked at the sales of similar properties nearby, their value should be probably within 10%, maybe 15 of what those sales they're looking at.
With housing prices changing so drastically and some people paying over market price, is it easy to establish?
Well, I don't
value?
Know that there is such a thing as over market prices.
Or whatever you pay is the market price, right?
That's right.
Good
for
point.
That property.
Good point.
For that specific property. And, in the assessor department, we take market areas. There might be 800 properties in that market area. There might be 1,500. There might be 200. But we keep track of all the sales in that particular valuation division. And those are what is used to find the values on all the other properties.
You seem to be suggesting that you don't always agree with the figure that the assessor's department arrives at.
Not necessarily. Because you can't look at 40,000 properties and be able to tell if they're right or wrong. You can look at your sales. You can look at similar properties and see if they compare and if that value makes sense. And you do your analysis, your mathematical analysis. It's a rough job.
How many people in the office working on it?
Well, there's basically 8 people that are actually hands-on properties, hands-on real estate.
And did you enjoy your time there? Was that a good job for you?
It was a good job for me. I can't say that I always enjoyed it. I always enjoyed the challenge. It's a great mix of being able to feel like you're actually trying to make something better, and at the same time, you have to talk to taxpayers. You get to talk to taxpayers. Especially being in the field in the assessor department, you knock on a lot of doors, and you are never welcome.
That's a little tough. That would get old in a hurry.
It takes a while to get used to it. Most people are very gracious. Very rarely.
Gracious but frosty, huh?
Not necessarily frosty, but tentative.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always good to have the opportunity to really explain what happens in a county assessment.
So when you knocked on their door, what were you asking or what were you telling?
I was telling them that, hi, I'm here. I'm here from the assessor's department, and I need to make sure that all of our measurements and all of our judgments on the quality of your home and the condition of your home and all the buildings and structures on your home, the configuration of your land, whether it's steep or flat or wet, I'm here to verify that our information we're using to calculate your value on your property is accurate.
And then what are you set about doing? Measuring everything? Measuring the lot, starting with that?
Well, ideally, we would have a sketch of, say, the house available, and we would be able to look at that sketch, walk around the property and see, yes, this sketch is accurate. That much is right. We look at the house, is the roof falling off or the windows, crooked and make some judgments on.
Or there seems to be an extra 2,000 feet over here on the side of the house.
That's the thing that, human beings are a huge part of the system still. and
try as we may to do it without the humans, we invariably need one.
Well, I'm sure it will all be robotized at some point.
God, sooner the better.
But
he said, in jest. Back to you.
Yeah, it's.
Well, you were in the assessor's office, right? You were work there, but you don't work there any longer.
Right, that's correct.
Did you leave?
Yes, I resigned.
In a huff?
In a huff. Yes, I made a display, but I wasn't disrespectful to anybody. But I was frustrated. I think part of the danger in the assessor department is that because of the evolution of how we do the work in there, is easy to kind of overlook some things because an assessor goes into that office and they are handed something that is apparently already functioning, that everything is okay.
You got an accurate.
And in the position I was in, where I straddled the big picture and the detail, I was able to see some things that maybe others in the office didn't place as much importance on as I did.
Something in the process that you thought could have been improved.
Yeah, I think the details on taxpayer properties, that's where assessment starts, is on your property. There's 40,000 of those properties. The process starts there. That is the foundation for the whole process. That is where your tax bill starts, is on your property. And I was discouraged for years by a lack of emphasis on that part of the process.
I mean, you didn't have an accurate idea of what the property was about or
in the end, condition. I really didn't have the tools I needed in order to get everything up to date, to get everything in step with the evolution that's occurring in the process in all the counties in this state. In this evolution, I think Chelan County, in many ways, is not necessarily ahead of the game, but in the game, especially in some of the technology department. But in the respects of taxpayer properties and being accurate on taxpayer properties, I think in this evolution, Chelan County is still kind of dragging its knuckles.
So you drive out to the house, you ascertain the size of the lot, the condition of the home, and then you do a guesstimate?
No, all the characteristics of each property are fed into the computer. On the structures, there are cost tables that are established by a national company. So all your measurements of the various parts of your house, be it the deck, be it the barn, the house itself, all those are fed into separate cost tables, and that generates a base value of what it would, how much it would cost to create that house again. So that's generated by the computer. And then, say, the house I'm talking about now sold, we would look at what that house sold for, what it costs to build it new, and see what the difference is between those two. And then, overall, in that market area, the value of that property would be adjusted to the market.
That's, no matter that's what hard to know what that is with the construction costs always changing and variable.
Yeah, that's I think that keeping current on the cost tables in the machine is very important. Some of these things, I believe, need to be addressed more urgently.
So with the holes in the system that you perceive, are we being undercharged or overcharged?
There's no way to...
Or mischarged.
To generalize that. Yeah. Because overall, it's correct. You look at 40,000 properties, it's within bounds of what's what market value is. If you look overall, it's on... I can't say whether... each individual property owner is being overvalued or undervalued.
But if you found fault in the system, what was the fault that you witnessed or that you were worried about?
I think just more detail, better detail, more accuracy on individual taxpayers' properties is where the emphasis needs to go.
And that might actually result in a higher bill for the property owner, more accurate.
Yeah, there's no telling which way it will go until you get every property right down to the, is close to the, can I say gnat's ass on the radio?
I think so, yeah. It seems like an innocuous part of the gnat. No one's ever been. We haven't had too many reactions, overreaction or underreaction.
I apologize to anybody out there that I've offended. You can go to kevinomi.com and drop me a line and
tell us your own particular view of the gnat. Well, let's say that you are elected assessor. What would you change and how would you change it?
The first thing I'd change is I would go from a 4-year inspection cycle to a 6-year inspection cycle. That will take a year to put together. The advantage to going to a 6-year cycle is that it would allow the field appraisers 30-some percent more time to do a given amount of properties so that they can take the time to represent as accurately as possible each property that they are doing that year.
Special guest is Kevin Ome. That's his voice right there. He's a candidate for Chelan County Assessor. He's worked in the assessor's office, and he was a reluctant guest who I managed to get in, and he's here right now, which is kind of exciting. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll reset his candidacy for the Chelan County Assessor's office.
You're listening to The Agenda on
Herbicides. Make sure you and your crew are ready for the 2019 growing season.
The third annual PN.
I guess I pushed the magic button. Sorry, everyone. Magic button time is 12:53 at News Radio 560 KPQ. Kevin Ome is my guest. He's the candidate for Chelan County Assessor. Kevin, we have very little time left because I've enjoyed talking with you. Can you ask the people of the county for your vote, for their vote?
Well, I'll talk to the voters in Chelan County that haven't voted yet, the procrastinators that have watched their ballot get scooted across the coffee splash kitchen table for a week and a half.
Just keep moving it around without opening it.
And those who miss the drama of a voting day and wish they could still go tomorrow and swing a lever, vote for me. We hate paying taxes, but we're stuck with it for the time being. And if we're going to do that, let's make sure that it's as accurate according to the law as we possibly can. Thank you very much for having me here.
Thanks for being here. Kevin Ome, candidate for Chelan County Assessor.
I'm Christine Brown, and I approve this message. I'm running for Congress because I want to fix health.